The time has come to reaffirm our enduring spirit, to choose our better history, to carry forward that precious gift, that noble idea passed on from generation to generation, the God-given promise that all are equal, all are free, and all deserve a chance to pursue their full measure of happiness.
It's been 100 days since America's President Barack Obama made that somber yet impassioned inauguration speech to a crowd of 2 million people in Washington's National Mall, and to the hundreds of millions watching and listening around the world. In it, he admitted that America faced enormous challenges, starting with a deep economic crisis, but he promised that those challenges would be met. He drew a clear line under the Bush era that had just ended, repudiating his predecessor in language that was almost shockingly direct. No longer would America abandon the rule of law and human rights for expediency's sake. Guantanamo and state-sanctioned torture would be no more. Speaking to the Muslim world directly, he said America would extend its hand if they were willing to unclench their fist. And he vowed America would in future harness the sun and the winds and the soil for energy. So 3 months on, what has Barack Obama, America's first black president, achieved? I'm Jonathan Friedland, and along with my Guardian colleagues in the United States, I'll be using this traditional first moment of judgment to ask if President Obama has done enough, or too much too fast. And I'll ask what this tells us about the next 45 months of the president's first term in office. Barack Obama took office in the depths of the biggest financial crisis to hit the US since the Great Depression of the 1930s. Obama inherited a deficit from George W. Bush measured in the trillions, and a recession that's biting deep into American savings, threatening their jobs and their homes. Resuscitating the economy was always going to be essential to implementing any of Obama's agenda. So how has he coped? Andrew Clark in New York. Well, it's certainly true that when Obama went into his presidency, there was pretty well a consensus that he would have no presidency if he couldn't get the economy going again. And there, in a way, as I think you heard hinted at, his fate is in the hands of those bankers. They need to play ball and go along with this plan to mop up those toxic assets. And there has been some hesitation, some wariness by the bankers on that score. Some say they're just worried that if they go for this deal, they could end up being whacked afterwards in the same way that public opinion turned against those people from the insurance giant AIG. So a lot of bankers are thinking, well, maybe we'll help out Obama, only then for people to resent the money we make doing it. Other worries, too, about his team, the fact that then this criticism you hear from the left, that it's many of the old Clinton crowd who are advising Obama economically, embodied by Larry Summers, his chief economic advisor, who was one of the key deregulators back in the 1990s. And when that's coupled with the president's own often discussed cool, his very cool, calm demeanor, that has managed to make the administration in these 100 days look a bit even out of touch, as it did on those AIG bonuses. So I think the key question politically is, will all these things we've been talking about work? And if they do, at what point does it stop being George W. Bush's recession and become Obama's recession? Mike Tomasky in Washington. This issue of torture and the Bush record was in fact on the agenda right at the very beginning of the Obama presidency, because on, I think, his first full day in office, he issued an edict saying that America no longer would tolerate torture. As straightforward as that. He also, in that same period, right at the beginning, announced his intention to close Guantanamo Bay, controversial because of the suspicion that detainees have been mistreated. What I think perhaps people didn't expect is that here we are 100 days in and it is still a dominant issue, and in fact one that is sucking a lot of the air, people worry, out of the Obama agenda elsewhere, because it's taking up a lot of time ever since the release of those memos you heard Mike Tomasky referring to. It's not even straightforward on partisan lines. The Democrats themselves are split between those who say a terrible thing was done in the Bush era and we should investigate it with a 9/11 style commission, perhaps a truth commission, perhaps even prosecutions going to the highest level of those who authorised torture, the image of Dick Cheney there in the dock, versus those people who say, move on, draw a line under it. And also, let's face it, there may be some senior Democrats on the Hill who are implicated in this because they themselves knew or were told, were briefed about what was going on. So it's turning into a very, very live political question, not just something that President Obama can draw a line under and put behind him, and one that we're told is even splitting his own team of advisors. So what seemed like a symbolic declaration on day one, day two of his presidency, 100 days in, is still a live and in some ways threatening issue that does risk taking a lot of the momentum and energy out of this first phase of the Obama presidency. Of course, when President Obama made those first statements on torture and on Guantanamo, he was partly talking to a liberal constituency inside the United States, but he was also sending a message to the wider world.
Thank you.
What some of the historians have been saying about these Obama 100 days is that while some of his predecessors did enormous amounts in the domestic sphere, no president has really come in with so much to do domestically and in foreign policy. And that is what has made these 100 days so full. As you were hearing Ewan McCaskill chart their huge and symbolic announcements and moves, drawing down from Iraq, escalating in Afghanistan, and opening a new diplomatic front with Iran. What are some of the dangers? I think first, Afghanistan, which he is really making so central by sending more troops there and making it very clear it's a priority. Some of his supporters worry for him. They say this could be his Vietnam. It's now his war, no longer one he just merely inherited. So if America gets bogged down in Afghanistan, that could hang around Obama's neck, and people are wondering if it will do for him what it did so calamitously for Lyndon Johnson and his presidency. Iran, well, could it be his Iraq? Will it in the end take military action to part Iran from its nuclear ambitions? At the moment, the Obama administration is determined and convinced that diplomacy can work. But the very fact that the Iranian leadership has not immediately played ball and cooperated with Washington threatens, at least, to make, and this will be a nightmare that will be in the minds of many older Democrats, to make Obama look like Jimmy Carter, someone who reached out but failed and was in some ways humiliated in Iran. So that's a danger. On the positive side of the ledger, you have to mention Russia. I think a lot of in the press have overlooked the extraordinary significance of President Obama's declaration, not that he simply wants to reduce nuclear weapons, but he wants to rid the world of nuclear weapons. He said that in a major speech in Prague during his European tour. He has the backing of very senior figures in the American foreign policy establishment who are genuinely talking about a zero option. There's almost a bluff here at work where no one can believe he's serious, but he seems to be. And his talks with Russia, where he seemed to get on very well with President Medvedev, suggest that he could make history with that move alone if he manages to reduce sharply, even to zero, towards zero, the nuclear arsenals of both Russia and the United States. And it is, again, an indication of the scale of Obama's ambition, how much history this man wants to make. One exception, Israel and Palestine. My pessimistic fear is that this could be the one area that is not touched by the Obama magic. And that's partly because he hasn't, in these first 100 days, set out his own stall, his own vision, a major speech of setting out what he wants to happen between Israelis and Palestinians. And into that vacuum could come all the delay tactics and all the hesitations from the parties in the region. There were hopes that victory for Barack Obama would signal the return of the United States as a leader in the worldwide effort to protect the environment. Obama promised to implement fuel efficiency policies, to reduce America's dependence on foreign oil, and to tackle global warming. But as green issues get pushed down the agenda around the world, grappling with the economic crisis, how has the recession affected the Obama administration's commitment to green energy? The Guardian's US environment correspondent, Suzanne Goldenberg, took to the streets of Washington to tell us.
Obama campaigned in these elections as if he was going to be America's first green president. And I think what we've seen in these 100 days is that he means it. Strong appointments, people who are committed to dealing with climate change across his administration. We've seen action to roll back some of the worst deeds of the Bush administration on the environment. And we've seen an effort to begin to put in place the fundamentals of a new low-carbon economy. And he's also moved to take the first steps to limit carbon emissions here in the U.S. Now, together, what those two things are going to do is really consolidate this idea that America is ready to move into a leadership position on climate change. And that's going to be really important moving forward to Copenhagen. I think Obama has worked really well to build trust in America's commitment to dealing with global warming, that countries around the world can see that America is willing to take action itself and not just demand it from poor countries. Now, it's still early days. Congress has to come up with climate legislation, and that could be a really tough fight. But the first steps have been taken, and those, I think, are good ones.
Some people, of course, mock the very idea of using 100 days as some kind of milestone. They say it's just a journalistic conceit. If that's true, the memo didn't reach the Obama White House itself. They have taken very seriously the 100-day marker, and it does seem to matter. If you look at recent history, 20th century history, the high-achieving presidencies did huge amounts in their first 100 days. The model is FDR, setting up the whole infrastructure of the New Deal, Lyndon Johnson's war on poverty, and from the other side of the political spectrum, Ronald Reagan and his tax-cutting agenda was set in train in those first 100 days. Barack Obama has followed that pattern and done a lot. But we don't yet have those series of institutions to show for it that Franklin Roosevelt had already created by now. But nevertheless, it is very hard to see how, given the hand he had been dealt, an economic crisis and a very poisonous foreign policy inheritance, at least in terms of America's relations with many parts of the world, it's very hard to see how President Obama could have done very much more. And the evidence from the polls is that the public are, to a remarkable extent, still on side. Approval ratings in the high 60s, touching nearly 70%. Very high approval ratings. So, you have to say, as first acts go, this one has been very, very good. But the hard work is still to come. I'm Jonathan Friedland, and this has been Barack Obama's 100 Days.